Beethoven was in his 30th year when his first symphony appeared. He's often regarded as a late starter by Mozartian standards, and it's been remarked too that this work is more neutral and less personal than some of the earlier piano sonatas or the Opus 18 quartets. But a symphony is public rather than private music, and it seems that Beethoven was content at this stage to establish himself in a form with so many great precedents, and to do so in a key he often associated with basic harmonies, C major. Consider the first solo entry in the C major piano concerto. Or the first movement of the piano sonata, Opus 2, number 3. Or even the finale of the Fifth Symphony. The First Symphony does, however, begin with some surprising harmonic moves. To my knowledge, no sketches survive for this opening, and little, in fact, for the First Symphony at all. But in the Kafka miscellany from the British Museum, there are sketches for an earlier C major symphony, which he apparently didn't finish. Again, we notice an enjoyment of fundamental scale passages. And there seems a direct line of descent or ascent into the finale of the symphony we know, part of which we heard just now. The sketches for the earlier symphony also contain this sequential progression. And the First Symphony did adopt a similar harmonic shift in the Allegro of the first movement. Maybe wishful thinking to relate these two, but work on an unfulfilled project is liable to leave a mark on a later fulfilled one. But the most revolutionary movement in the First Symphony was the scherzo, still called minuet in the score. Was it, like the scherzo of the Eroica, first conceived in a more traditional tempo? The harmonic movement, at any rate of the opening, suggests this. One could hardly, however, imagine the trio section at this pace. Did the trio, then, persuade the minuet as a whole to adopt this scherzo-like tempo of Allegro molto e vivace? The absence of evidence leaves many questions unanswered concerning the creation of the First Symphony. However, the material for the Second Symphony can be traced in at least two main sources: a sketchbook dating from the end of 1799 to the beginning of 1801, this concerns the first movement, and a subsequent one dating mostly from 1802 and containing extensive sketches for the finale. Like the First Symphony, the Second begins with a slow introduction, though on a considerably larger scale. events might be epitomized as follows. A call to attention, a cantabile theme in the wind, then in the strings, followed by some dramatic developments in character and tonality, and leading to that powerful unison assertion of D minor. There's a remarkable premonition there of the first movement of the Ninth Symphony, written over 20 years later. Now let's turn to a sketch for the opening of the Second Symphony, probably dating from 1800, 2 years before its completion. The sketch is on a single stave and mostly in single notes, and yet the sequence of events is already recorded. The call to attention, the cantabile theme. This is then repeated in a different register, implying a different scoring. Next, the modulations with the harmony indicated. And the move to D minor. On the next page of this same sketchbook, there's an outline of the exposition of the following allegro, or at least up to the arrival of the second subject, so let's examine this. Then follow three empty bars and an answering phrase to an unwritten first phrase. The rhythmic character is clear, and so is the harmonic procedure, as we can hear in the symphony at this point. Returning to the sketch, it's interesting to see how much is already there in embryo. One idea, the sequel to the first subject, eventually merged with the subject itself. In the sketch, and in the symphony, this was, however, to play an important part in the second group of themes, although its original context may have caused it to recall dramatically a figure from the first subject. Let's hear this passage. Now, a word about the first subject itself. the sketch, the pattern is repeated yet again. Later came the idea of detaching the last two bars as a separate figure. And this fragmentation cut both ways. It also gave independence to the first half of the phrase, as we heard just now in the orchestra, and as we can hear elsewhere in the movement. And there a link is also forged with the D minor unison passage from the introduction. But now caught up in the allegro tempo. Before leaving this particular sketch, a glance at the stormy transition via the key of A minor to offset the eventual major key second group. The idea of this in rough. And brought into sharper focus in the symphony. The first movement sketches I've been discussing probably date from 1800. But now let's turn to the later sketchbook of 1801-3, where we find 11 pages devoted to unbroken work on the finale. This was explored by Gustav Notterbohm in his first extended publication, which confined itself to this particular book. But first, let's hear the actual opening of the finale. Much of the movement's impetus derives from the vigorous opening figure and from the fact that it's poised on the dominant seventh. This harmonic question is only completely answered when the same idea is triumphantly presented on the tonic chord of D major at the very end. This figure is present or implied in all these sketches. As with the case of the first movement of the Eroica Symphony, there are progressive large-scale drafts. Two of them cover the exposition up to the return of the Rondo theme, and another sketches out the whole movement. Beethoven was to see great unifying possibilities in the two-note upbeat motive. And this could be used not only to unify, but also to recall the whole theme. There's little sign of this in the first sketch, which I'll pick up just before the first return. The second sketch elaborates the return considerably. Notice the theme beginning there on the half bar, which does play a part in the coda of the finished work. The third sketch goes even further than the final version in keeping us waiting for the first rondo return. Progressive sketches are even more revealing in their treatment of the subsidiary ideas. Call them for convenience, transition, second subject, and cadence theme. Sketch number one introduces this. Sketch number two presents the bare bones of something once more familiar. Did Beethoven already hear, but not need, to write in the woodwind theme that clothes this? Yet when he came to a sketch for the complete finale, Beethoven missed this out of the exposition, saving it for two later episodes, and thus making or envisaging an outsized rondo with four episodes and four returns. A new idea had absorbed him. Listen now to the way this temporarily excludes the other, leaping forward to the cadence theme. Symphony, these three ideas come into line. The transition, the second subject proper, and the cadence theme. So we'll pick this up on the orchestra from the point where the transition begins, up to the first return of the rondo. In many of the sketches, writing for himself alone, Beethoven needed no more than a reminder, often a bass line. This comes near the end of the finale of the Second Symphony, and the knowledgeable Beethoven lover will, like Beethoven, supply the rest of the harmony by implication, or recognize the passage from the bass alone. Is this new idea coming so late in the movement relevant? In the symphony, the answer is soon supplied. Leaving the Second Symphony, a further point outside the actual subject of the sketches, yet also relevant. A seed planted in one work that might flower further still in a later one. I mentioned the D minor passage in the introduction to the first movement that seemed an uncanny foretaste of the Ninth Symphony. Listen then to the trio of the scherzo of the second. Thank you. particularly with its later bassoon counterpoint. Beethoven actually resurrected this theme, or something like it, when contemplating the Ninth Symphony, and he wrote it down in an outlandish key. Over this, we find the words symphony, third movement. The key of D-flat didn't remain, and nor did the normal scherzo 3-4 rhythm, nor was the scherzo of the ninth the third movement. The theme was not, however, completely exorcised. The eventual trio in the scherzo of the ninth may be remote spiritually from the earliest Beethoven of the Second Symphony, but it still shows its allegiance to the past. Thank you.